It's also true, though, that the IOM study, recent IOM study, showed that if you control for many of the those factors, especially the socioeconomic factors, the U.S. still ranks way below comparable countries in terms of its health status. So if you control for income, education, age, gender, you still find that we are sicker. And it can't all be attributed to obesity levels. And we smoke less than most European countries. So there's still something happening in our healthcare system or some other variable, which is different. Having said that, if you look cross-nationally at, and I think this was referred to today, if you look cross-nationally at the combination of our health spending and social spending, it's not out of line with other countries. We've just chosen to allocate those kinds of expenditures much more to healthcare than we have to social services. So there's no question in my mind that we need to reallocate some of that spending, which is why one talks about opportunity costs. There is a cost not to disciplining the healthcare system, and it has to do with what we don't spend money on as much as what we do spend money on. Everyone's hungry. Rob.
Just an observation, not a question, but your chart with the emerging consensus among the report writers, I noticed that 5 of the 11 items on the consensus would raise costs rather than lower them. Consensuses are always easy to reach if you start with the idea you're going to spend more.
Well, in fact, we could talk about which of these actually raise costs. Some of them we had costed, if they were part of our report, we had costed by the Actuarial Research Corporation. And they didn't always raise costs according to the assumptions that we gave them to use.
Well, I mean, in large measure because you have offsetting items.
Right. Well, you
say provide incentives for X as opposed to impose penalties for not doing X.
Well, we could talk about the details, but the fact is that these are areas of consensus. It's true. They don't together make a comprehensive package that would necessarily contain costs. But I think they do show a central tendency in policy right now. Yes?
So you talked about adoption of EHRs. What do you hope in 2 or 3 years to be able to stand up and say about exchange of information and meaningful use?
So exchange of information is a whole lot harder to achieve than adoption. Adoption has value, but it doesn't have anywhere near as much value without exchange. Exchange is a team sport. So the analogy that I use using Boston sports is that you can be the Tom Brady of health information exchange. If you don't have any receivers down the field, you might as well hang up your cleats. So you can be the Robert Johnson Hospital here locally, you can be all ready to exchange information. If the physicians and hospitals in your community don't want to, there's no point in doing it. It's of no value. So this is a collective activity. It's not an individual activity. It requires the collective creation of standards and then the implementation of those standards with the intent of using them to exchange information. Now, in the competitive world of healthcare right now, exchanging health information among hospitals is a little bit like asking the Toyota and BMW dealer to share their consumer information. It is not a natural act. And yet, we expect the technology to solve the problem. There are 1,000 reasons you can come up with not to share information, even when it's technically possible. You can talk about HIPAA. You can talk about incompatibilities of software. You can find refuge in the technical issues. If we made it in the business interests of local entities to exchange information, it would happen within years. Until we get past that, we will continue to say the technology is failing when it's not a technical problem. I had a conversation once in Boston when Stewart was involved in this. We tried to put together a coalition for to reform and improve the healthcare system in Massachusetts and Eastern Massachusetts. And I had sat down the CIOs of all the major teaching hospitals, and I said to them, this is before the High Tech Act, could you exchange information electronically if you wanted to? And they all nodded. And I said, why don't you? And they said, because our CEOs haven't told us to. And CEOs don't tell them to for a reason. It costs money. It's a pain in the neck. And it gives away proprietary information. So I think we need to solve both the technical problems, but we need to create a demand. And it's no different than creating a demand for cost reduction and efficiency improvement and quality improvement in general. It's changing the macro system that governs all these financial behaviors that we see throughout our healthcare system.
Yes, Dave, just we talked a little bit about this today, but I'd like to get your perspective. We talked about when you're looking at delivery system reform and talking about your work in high performing health systems, we talked about the problem. We've got some good systems out there, and they've been around for a long time. And the issue about scaling up, I mean, why? What should we do? I mean, there was one suggestion put out that this is the only way it's going to scale up is with big public policy, big money, public sector. What thoughts do you have about, you know, we got some good ideas. Encouraging innovation and development of other things. We got good things now, like, you know, growing those.
Well, the failure there is what I've been calling a macro system failure. It's a failure of incentives. It's a failure of culture. It's a failure of leadership at the public level and at the private level. Before I took the Commonwealth job, I spent a year as the Chief Health Information and Innovation Officer at Partners System, a small local northeastern system. We had at Partners reached 40% of our patients at risk through a combination of the alternative quality contracting and Pioneer ACO, the other local insurance companies that had lined up with Blue Cross Blue Shield around the same centers as the AQC. I saw behaviors at Partners that I had never seen before. We were putting money not only into IT, but into population management at a very high level, tens of millions of dollars. We were developing systems to manage high-risk patients. We were taking the MGH's high-cost patient management techniques and rolling them out throughout the system. It cost money, it took a lot of management time, but it definitely, there was a turning point. And I think that is an essential requirement for getting these innovations to spread from one place to another, because right now there's no business case for them in most places, and it's trouble to implement them. You can rely to a certain extent on the altruism and mission-driven goodwill of local leaders. That's what's making Pittsburgh work, I assume. It's what makes Intermountain what it is. It's what makes some of the Catholic health systems have the values that they have. It's what makes George Mason, Virginia Mason, what it is. But that is not the way to build, change a healthcare system that's the fifth largest GDP in the world. We can't rely on heroes. Yes, Karen.
So David, I know you've seen the National Research Council's report on America's health disadvantage. Which is pretty appalling, even if you think you know all this. The report is pretty shocking. What do you see as the root causes of the relatively poor population health we have? And as a health foundation, how will health foundations address those root causes? Are we going to be doing things we never thought we'd be doing?
Stuart, is it time for me to sit down?
No.
So, fortunately for me, the National Research Council couldn't figure out what all the causes were of these discrepancies. So I'm not going to try to make them up from data that doesn't exist. I think it's a very interesting research agenda. I can't believe that our fragmented healthcare system doesn't have some role in that differential. But I think we've got to probe that question a lot more closely. obesity, there is a discrepancy in obesity that probably explains some of it. But I don't think we understand, and the report was very clear on saying that, the reason for the differences are unknown. Now, philanthropy can help excavate some of that information. I think the kinds of knowledge that you need to pin those things down will depend a lot on research of a scale that it's very hard for small private foundations to fund themselves.
I want to thank you, David, for doing this and for being such a loyal recipient of Tubby's Pritzker Cup. You may not have hit all 20, but you're probably as close as anybody. Thank you so much, and thank you.